When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
My Seven Chakras, episode 367.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body, from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you experience effortless healing, awakening, and abundance. In today's episode, we go deep into discussions about mindfulness, eliminating distraction, improving focus, and mastering your mind. So this is an episode that you're really going to enjoy. So make sure that you stick till the very end. But before diving in, I'd like to remind you that I have recently released a 24-page PDF document that outlines some of my favorite ways to raise my vibrations and start feeling better almost immediately. If you'd like to grab that free download, go to mysevenchakras.com/feel better now. Very aptly titled, mysevenchakras.com/feel better now. All right, so let's bring on our special guest for today, David Richards. David Richards is a business professional, life coach, yoga instructor, and speaker on self-development. He spent his early childhood living in various parts of the United States and 3 years living on the island of Okinawa, Japan. After graduating university with a degree in English, he was commissioned an officer in the Marines. He served for 15 years on active duty before deciding to break out from the path that his father and brother had followed in making the military a career and left the Marines to pursue a life as a civilian. He joined Cisco Systems in 2006 and shortly thereafter discovered yoga. Down to earth, insightful, and sometimes silly, he blends elements of yoga with quantum physics to bring the esoteric together with the practical for a truly unique perspective of how the mind works, in turn creating easily understood self-development plans that create lasting change for a more fulfilling life. So these are some clues or hints into what we might be speaking about today. But David, really great to have you on our show. And are you ready to inspire?
Hey, AJ, so glad to be here. Thank you for the introduction. And absolutely, ready to share with your audience my stories and things that have worked, things that haven't worked, but the growth that the journey of life is. So absolutely.
Wonderful. So I can't wait to start. Let's talk about your childhood to begin with. What was it like growing up in your household, in your home?
Yeah, it's, you know, we had a loving, very loving, nurturing environment. And, you know, everybody grows up with their sense of normal. And so for me, my sense of normal was we moved every 2 to 3 years. And what I didn't realize was a lot of that created, you know, beliefs in me, just really long relationships. You know, so one day you and I might be best friends, and the next day I'm moving because my dad got orders to a new duty station. And so this is certainly before the age of the internet. and Facebook and chatting and texting. And so our friendship just stopped. But, you know, it was great to, you know, on the flip side, it was great to see different parts of the country at an early age. Great to certainly live in Japan for 3 years, you know, got to South Korea, got to the Philippines there. And just being exposed to different parts of the world at that age had tremendous impact that still I carry with me today.
Got it. So with that moving, you know, that having a friend and then losing the friend because you're moving to another city or a part of the country, what sort of impact did that have on you in retrospect? Because I remember when I was a kid, it happened the other way for me because I used to have a friend and then he would, you know, move to a different city. Parents would get relocated. And deep down, I felt that I could never have like a long-term friend. I always wanted to have that best friend, right? As kids, we want to feel accepted. We want to have that friendship. We want to feel that, you know, love. Right. And reciprocity. But the fact that every time I made a friend, either he would move to a different city or I would move schools. And I don't know, I'm still discovering how that has affected me long term. But how did that, you know, affect you?
Yeah, no, for sure. It really created two beliefs that I took with me into my adult life. And so one of those, like I said, was just a relationship's end. And so I just didn't fully appreciate the currency of a rich relationship and rich friendship and what that meant. And certainly I had some as I went, you know, as I grew up. And I still remember this guy comes to mind, Jason, who was my best friend when we lived in Japan. And we stayed in touch for a few years afterwards when his family moved to Virginia and I moved to North Carolina. But I just didn't appreciate that keeping someone and having a lifelong friend was really something that I could have and cherish. So, you know, that was one belief that just friendships and relationships ended. And I certainly carried, you know, I've got great friends from high school still, and I've been out of high school a long time. But the other belief really that it created was when it came to romantic relationships. And so if you have this dynamic that in some cases relationships end, well, when it comes to romance, then you almost kind of have to go all in because you're trying to shore up this relationship before you get to the point where it's going to end. And so I became super romantic. I became a really romantic person. I wrote poems. You know, I think when other people, you know, in certainly the later part of high school and into college were discovering physical intimacy, I was still kind of looking at romantic things. And but that, you know, those two beliefs I really took with me through a big part of my adult life too. And I think it was only through kind of the last, you know, 5 or 6 years that I really awoke to them and realized kind of the power they'd have over me and was able to let them go.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing. It's interesting how one incident or two incidents or, you know, these things that happen to ourselves as children have an effect on different aspects of our life, even as we are adults. And only when we sort of take the time to shine the light on those parts of us which are now in the dark do we realize, wow, that did affect me, right? So thanks a lot for sharing. Now, your father and your brother were both Marines, right? So what role did they play as you were growing up in your decisions, especially as far as a career is concerned?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So I was very creative growing up. And I think that was, you know, part of the reality of not having a consistent friend that I went from grade school all the way up to high school with. I got really creative. So I wrote, I drew, I was very artistic. And in high school, I actually got something published. You know, a piece of a short story published. I got honorable mention in a magazine nationally. And I just thought that everybody could do that. I didn't realize that it was, that writing was something that I just excelled at a little bit. So when it came time to look at life after high school, I remember my dad sat me down. He said, listen, you know, we'll pay for part of your college, but you're going to pay for the other half. And if you get an academic scholarship, that's great. If not, you might want to look at ROTC and join the military. And I guess one of the other beliefs that I grew up with that I mentioned was I learned to hate the Marine Corps because I blamed them for always moving us around. And so I thought, okay, if I have to do, you know, a military scholarship, I'm going to do that, but I'm not going to join the Marines because no. And there wasn't any, you know, my dad didn't push me. My brother was kind of going down that path as well. And I got into college and I was going to go into the Navy. You know, so every semester when you do an ROTC program, you have to do a class for ROTC. And so the first class is like naval weapons systems. So it's kind of like missiles and stuff. And it's really cool. Mm-hmm. And then the second semester, it's naval like engineering, like the actual ship's engineering. And my mind is a liberal arts mind. And so I started mechanical engineering. I just kind of blacked out. like, oh, it's not going to be good. So I'm like, I got to get to the Marines. And so that's kind of the pathway that took me down. That was, you know, I know the Marines, I'm familiar with them. I grew up in the Marine Corps. And so that was the path I decided to take.
Got it. So you know the Marines, your father and your brother both were Marines. And deep down, you were kind of blaming the Marine Corps because you were moving all the time and you didn't like that experience. And then on top of that, you were a creative person, right? You used to write a lot, maybe doing some drawing, and you were receiving rewards for that. And I remember when I was a kid, I used to, you know, write a lot as well and draw and sketch and do cartoons on my sketchboard. Now, before we go into, you know, what was happening in your mind, you know, as you were going closer and closer to life as a Marine, what is it about the mind of a creative person? Because you sort of alluded to the fact that you were creative and so you were sort of away from the others or maybe by yourself as well?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think it's interesting because I think there are people who go through life and they accept the framework of life as it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's the society, there's a structure, you go through the, you kind of check these blocks or go through these milestones and that's perfectly acceptable. And I think then there are creative people who see the world not as it is, but how it can be. Mm-hmm. And those are the people who look to change things. And you know, it's so funny that we're kind of talking about this because I was just sharing this with someone yesterday. You know, I've gotten to the place in my life where I realized I'm never going to be one of those people that just kind of accepts the status quo. Like the thrill, the thrill of living for me is pursuing something greater and something more. And so I think that's, you know, I think that's the spark of creativity. And I think that, you know, the best thing that we can do, and certainly what I would encourage your audience to do, is just, you know, ignite that spark. If you have a creative flair in you, or if it's in your kids or someone you know, let that, you know, burn that spark and see where it goes, because it's such a powerful gift. And there's nothing to say that there's nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with accepting the status quo. But I just come to appreciate that there are people who are going to do that and people who aren't.
Got it. So I love what you're sharing right now. And one of the reasons why people listen to our podcast is because they want to move past the status quo. They realize that there's a light within them. They want to create something that is larger than themselves. They want to make the world better than it was before. And in that, there's a realization that your life, there's going to be a lot of changes and sometimes you're going to be alone. And what's going to keep you moving is that faith in that thing that you want to create, whether it's some art that you want to bring out into the world, whether it's a new vocation that you want to pursue. But that pursuit is what keeps us going all the time. And it seems like that kept you going as well. That artist, that writer within you was always deep within. Now, for someone who's new to the term, because we've got people around the world listening, what is a Marine and how is a Marine different from some of the other parts of the armed forces, or maybe how is a Marine different from, like, let's say a Navy SEAL, if you can, you know, clear that up a bit.
No, I'm just smiling. First, I love what you said about the pursuit. I mean, I think we're having, this is going to be an awesome conversation. It's funny, I'm laughing because I was a keynote speaker back in January up in New York for a conference. And there were two keynote speakers, and the first guy who went ahead of me was a Navy SEAL. And I'm just like, oh, like it's hard to follow Navy SEALs because those guys are crazy good. But the first thing I said when I got on stage was, I said, okay, well, you know, this is much like real life. The SEALs come first and then the Marines come after. So to answer your question, you know, the Marines are in the U.S., you know, in the United States anyway, are part of the Department of the Navy. But it's really, the Marines are an amphibious landing force. So they're meant to kind of come from the sea. They're I guess the equivalent kind of modern day shock troops. So really, you know, when I was in the Marines, we were part of the initial landing force in Somalia back in 1992 in Operation Restore Hope. And that's what Marines do. Marines are there to kind of kick the door in, secure, you know, we secured the port facility, we secured the airport, and that allowed follow-on forces to come in. But that's different from, you know, the Army is conventionally land-focused. The Navy is obviously, you know, within the sea, and they have power projection, and then the Air Force is in the air. And SEALs, you know, SEALs are part of kind of the special forces. So Marines are kind of a couple notches below SEALs, but part of the elite fighting force, I would say.
Got it. And you were a Marine for 15 years, correct?
I was, yep.
So what was life like as a Marine? You were part of these different operations, special ops. You were in Somalia. Were you in Iraq as well?
I was off the coast of Kuwait. So so we were supposed to go to... So I was on a six-month float. So we're on ships, Navy ships. We're supposed to go to Australia, which is like, you know, paradise. I mean, just great beer, great people. And then something happened, a little thing called Somalia happened. So we went there for 2 months. And then after that, we went to the United Arab Emirates for about 3 weeks to kind of clean equipment and fix equipment. And then we spent a few weeks off the coast of Kuwait as part of the Desert Storm ceasefire campaign. But it's interesting you bring something up, and I want to share it because I think it's important to your listeners. So even though, I was an English major in college, I took a writing track. So I was writing, my own, almost all my homework assignments were writing. But when I got into the Marines, I pushed writing aside because I'm like, that's not what grownups do. Like, I've got my career now, and I'm going to focus on being a Marine. And I realized I was kind of pushing away a very fundamental part of who I was and trying to adopt this persona that the Marine Corps provides. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't until about 10 years into my career, I was actually in Virginia at my at an assignment, and the boss I reported to was a painter, and he had paintings in his office, and I was blown away that a Marine would have this kind of artistic bug. And so he's actually what got me started writing. He had a painting, like a Greek painting, and I wrote this poem called Achilles, written from the standpoint of Achilles talking, and that was the first thing I wrote after probably, like a 10-year hiatus in writing. So,
God, it's just wonderful that after a 10-year hiatus, you sort of discovered an aspect of yourself that you were subconsciously pushing away because of the persona that the Marines provided you. Maybe that did not gel with you, but for a moment, tell us, what was life like as a Marine? That, what is that different persona like? What is an average day like, as part of that troop or part of that group?
It's interesting because if you're not deployed somewhere, mm-hmm. You're almost kind of in this mindset where you're in case of war, break glass, and then the Marines pop out and they go somewhere. We would do training a lot of times. When I was in artillery, we would do field exercises. And what I mean by that was, I was stationed in San Diego, California. Mm-hmm. And a large base there with a huge, what we call, impact area. And so it's just this huge open area of terrain, and right. aircraft would come in and drop bombs there, or we would shoot artillery there or mortars. And so we would go out and kind of into our backyard, we called it, and shoot there. Or we'd go to the lovely 29 Palms, California, which is sounds enchanting, but is just a giant piece of desert. And we do maneuver exercises there. When we're in garrison, it's cleaning equipment, it's cleaning your weapons. If you've gone to the range to, practice, it's admin, a lot of physical exercise, because you want to maintain a certain state of readiness in case you have to get deployed or go somewhere. I remember one Labor Day, I got a call from my boss. I was sitting at home on vacation or taking a break, and he said, "Hey, we might have to send a unit to Kuwait because Saddam Hussein at the time had moved a division of armor or something down towards the Kuwaiti border." And he's like, "You're going to go to Kuwait Wednesday." And it's like on a Monday. I'm like, okay. And that's just, so there's this transitory feeling of life, because you realize at any moment you could get a call and have to go somewhere across the world.
Right. So I sense a lot of lower chakra activity, right? Because you're always thinking about your solar plexus chakra, which is your, fight and flight. You're pushing your confidence, because it does take a lot of confidence and action to be in the zone. And on top of that, root chakra, right? Because your sense of belonging, you're, as a Marine, I'm sure, uprooted from one place to the other. But also you're thinking about your survival, because what was it like going into a place like Kuwait as a Marine, knowing that things could end at any moment? Like, how did that thought of death, across the next step, what influence did that have on your life at that point? Because I know that at some point you left the Marines, right? And we can go into that as well.
Yeah. So, I'll go to Somalia, because, I was, like I said, I was part of the initial landing force. And so the intelligence we got was that there were going to be 1,000 armed Somalis at the beach in Mogadishu to meet us. Mm-hmm. And so I remember we landed on December 9th. And so we went to bed at 8 o'clock, I think, December 8th, and we're going to get up at midnight and get our equipment and then go down into these amphibious vehicles and drop off the back of these big Navy ships and get into the water to go to Mogadishu. And you're trying to sleep, but you're also trying to rationalize this idea that your life could end. And it's not through any, the person who's shooting at you doesn't know anything about you. And that bullets don't discriminate. You know, bullets just go where they're told to go. And so if you point a weapon and you shoot it, the bullet's going to do what it's told to do. And so you might not even be the person intending to be shot, and you could get shot. And it was, right. It was very, you know, at the time, I think I was 23, and it was very hard to reconcile those ideas in your head. And you know, at that point, you know, I certainly wasn't far in my path down yoga and kind of understanding what my belief system was. I'd been raised Christian, but you know, trying to find Christianity in the modern day sometimes I think is complicated and challenging for people. And I think that's certainly kind of what took me down the path towards yoga. But you know, back to the question, it was very hard to cope with this idea that for no reason other than just being at the wrong place in the wrong time, your life could end, you know, in the next 24 hours.
Right. I never thought about that, because there's one thing about dying, and then the other thing is about dying an impersonal death, right? Yep. Because like you alluded to, they didn't intend to kill you. Probably a bullet just ricocheted, or maybe there was a splinter cell and you just died. And so I'm just thinking, like, how is an impersonal death, a death by just accident, different from someone intending to kill you? So that's pretty interesting that you brought this into our conversation. So you spent 15 years there. What made you leave the Marines?
Yeah, you know, I think it was kind of the beginning of my awakening, really. So it was 2006, and I had a benign tumor in my neck, and I had that taken out. And after the surgery, it was, you know, early in the spring, and I just thought, what am I doing? What am I doing with my life? Like, I've been following this script,
right?
But I feel like it was kind of handed down to me. And it wasn't that it was force-fed, because like I said, I think if I had said, hey, I want to be a writer, you know, my parents would have helped me figure that out, or, you know, I would have gone down that path. But I'm like, I don't want this script anymore. This isn't what I want to do. And so I talked to my boss's boss and said I was going to get out, and he, you know, didn't support the decision fully, but he respected it. And I got out, and I think within a week of getting out, I took my first yoga class ever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a couple of questions over here, because I speak to a lot of our listeners who are in jobs that they don't really like, that does not align with what they truly believe in. They're probably very right, you know, very creative and very expressive and very emotional, but they're stuck in jobs that are more left brain, more logical, more do, you know, hustle. And so I see them changing a job within this umbrella of civilian life, which can be okay. But in your case, it was different, right? Because you moved from being in the armed forces or in as a Marine and into civilian life. It's sort of almost like stepping from one world to the other. So two questions over here. Yep. How was it like, you know, that move, that shift from being in the forces to being a civilian? And number two, where did that seed of yoga get planted in your mind? Because it seems like almost immediately you took your yoga class, right? So how did that happen?
Yeah. So we'll come back to the yoga question. I think you know, to talk to the first one, I think it is a different world. You know, when you realize, I think, I don't know what the total active duty force of the military is right now, but it's, you know, it's in the U.S. it's just a fraction of a percent of the entire population, and you realize that when you're in the military, you do everything together. You know, you shower together. I mean, if you're in a barracks, you know, everybody has there's a community shower. You bleed together if you're in combat or somebody gets wounded. You do all these things. So there's no boundaries.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And what I found really quickly in civilian life is there are boundaries. I mean, there are boundaries. Mm. And it was, I won't go into graphic detail, but I just remember I'd been with my current company for a few years, or for a few months, I'm sorry, and just come back from lunch with some of my team. And I leaned over, we're walking back in the building and walking up the stairs, and I leaned over to the guy I was talking to and just euphemistically, colorfully said, "Hey, I have to go to the bathroom." And he's like, "Keep it to yourself."
Okay.
I'm like, "Oh my gosh, you guys don't talk about that stuff here." Like,
right.
That's a conversation in the Marines. Like, you could have a whole conversation, like an afternoon about, like, oh, and so just recognizes those boundaries. And what I found, AJ, was probably for the first 3 or 4 years of my civilian life, every week I was comparing things that happened that week to what happened in the military. And it's just, you kind of, at least for me, I had to kind of process and reset and say, okay, you know, there are boundaries in terms of what people talk about. There are boundaries in terms of what you can say. There are boundaries in terms of how you can dress. And there, you know, some of those boundaries exist in the military because obviously the military has a ton of rules and order to it. But just kind of finding that transition, you know, it's a challenge, and it helps to work and talk with people who've already made the transition so that you can kind of accelerate. And I don't know that I did the best at that. You know, I was fortunate that when I came to Cisco to work, I worked supporting the military accounts they had. And so there were a lot of kind of former military that worked with us. But our ability to support veterans transitioning wasn't as established as we later made it. So, Your second question about, you know, getting to yoga, it's so funny. And I've come to appreciate that there are no coincidences in the universe, the way the universe works. So I had, I got out in August of 2006, and I think I, had come to my parents' house and was just looking at a sports magazine. And I talked about how pro football players were using yoga to strengthen their midsections. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. Maybe I work out a lot. I lift weights. Maybe it'll help with my stretching. And I went to my first class. And it was kind of a gentle yoga class. So no sweating, nothing. And it was kind of like, this is all right. And not crazy about it, but okay. And then 3 days later, I went to another class, different teacher, different style yoga, drenched in sweat, just watching the sweat drip off the mat, or, you know, off my forehead onto the mat. And I was blown away, but I was most blown away by what happened at the end. And it wasn't just Shavasana, but it was, what I realized was, you know, in the Marines, my last assignment was working in Central America. And I got maybe 50 email a week because I'd be in Honduras, I'd be in Panama, and just email wasn't the thing that I needed to pay attention to. And when I came to Cisco, I'd get 50 email in like the first 2 hours. And so I would leave work and my mind would just be this churn of noise with to-do lists and tasks and reminders and invites and meetings. And what I found when I got onto the mat was my mind just got quiet. And it was like, oh my God, like I can be without having to be projecting things into the future or thinking about the past. And like being present is pretty great. And I was just got pulled into yoga from there.
Got it. And as you were sort of describing the fact that when you came into civilian life, you were comparing every aspect of it to your life back in the Marines, right? It almost sounds like a breakup, right? When you have a breakup and when you have this new single life, almost everything reminds you of the relationship, right? Yep. The restaurants you go to, the people that you meet, because everything is connected. And I agree with what you're saying is everything is connected, that you know, what is happening in life right now. Even someone listening to this podcast, they were probably meant to listen to this podcast and listen to the conversations that were happening because they are moving closer and closer to something that they want to manifest or bring to life. So I appreciate what you shared. So talk to us about a little bit more about your life as a civilian. I mean, did you go through PTSD? And what was the experience like? Like, what were some of the stressful moments as a civilian? Like, one of the things you mentioned was the number of emails that you would get, right? The barrage of emails, which was much more compared to when you were a Marine. But because I receive a lot of emails from people, you know, veterans who are experiencing PTSD, and that can be a really difficult process to go through. Sure. Talk to us about any of those experiences that you went through.
Yeah, you know, I fortunately don't know that I suffered from PTSD. You know, I was fortunate in Somalia. well, I pointed a weapon at someone. I never had to be put in a situation where I shot someone. I got shot at, but that wasn't traumatic. I think it's just, especially, you're right. I love the analogy of being like a breakup, because you're like, oh, this is what my life used to be like when they were in my life. And it's completely different now. And so you're just trying to find that sense of balance. And part of that journey, I think why people struggle, and probably why I struggled, is because a lot of it is we try to externalize the journey when it's really an internal journey. Like, we have to make that path and find that path internally to be like, okay, I'm at peace. I think the biggest things were just understanding, in the military, even though it wasn't traditional work, you had a sense of what work was. There's, because it's a command and control and it's very structured, very hierarchical, you have this idea that, if I'm a major or I'm a company commander, I have this responsibility. This is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I need to do. And so it was trying to find those boundaries and limitations, and in some cases where the expansion was within civilian life, especially working, in a job. I think the transition out of uniform, away from work itself, was a little easier, but it was also just this idea, gosh, I could be anything I want to be. If I want to grow facial hair, I could grow facial hair. If I want to, wear 10 bracelets on my right wrist, I can do that. Like, just the freedoms that don't come or that aren't there when you're trying to maintain order and discipline in a military structure.
Got it. Yeah, because I recently heard, in fact, it was a couple of months back, actually, Jocko Willink said, discipline equals freedom.
Yep.
Right? It doesn't make sense at first, but it sort of makes sense, because when you go into a restaurant, right, and if there's a menu that has just three options, you feel better, because there's just three options and you can decide, right? But if there's a menu that has 200 options, I feel very overwhelmed. In fact, I don't like those kind of menus, because there are so many options and it takes time to choose, and sometimes things are not available, and so it gets very confusing. So did the sudden, increase of options, did it sort of overwhelm you? Like you mentioned, right, the haircut, what to wear.
Yeah, I think to an extent it did. And, for me, when I got out and kind of discovered yoga, it's almost like the pendulum swings in the opposite direction. And it wasn't, I wore flip-flops more than I used to, and I'd wear baggier clothes, and I was looking at yoga clothes, and I'm like, well, this is, do I need to craft this onto my identity? And so, in some cases, I think at one point, I think I even grew a little soul patch, and I'm like, okay. but I think it's just trying to find that balance and find your sense of self. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, I think just because it's, and it's interesting, because I think it really comes back to you get to a better place when you ask the right questions. And if I'd asked myself, okay, who am I going to be now that I'm out of the military? I could have created an identity that I wanted to step into instead of searching for it externally, like I talked about. And that was probably, that was part of the journey too.
Mm-hmm. So I love what you said right there. And maybe our listeners can also ask this question to themselves, what is the question you're asking? Because as a host, I've learned through experience and through practice that, the discussion can only go that far depending on the type of questions that you ask. And it has sort of allowed me to find out what is a better question to ask, right? And so in life too, like you've sort of alluded to, the quality of your life is dependent largely on the type of questions that you ask yourself. And are those questions empowering you, or are they, bringing you down? And so with that being said, and with all of our discussion so far, what made you write your latest book, The Lighthouse Keeper?
Yeah, great question. So I go back to my first book only because the idea for The Lighthouse Keeper was born in Whiskey and Yoga. So my first book, Whiskey and Yoga, about finding your purpose in life. In that, when I go onto the mat to teach, I try to frame the idea of existence and the idea of the mind in ways that resonates with people. And in some cases it might be, you are your life's director. And what kind of movie are you making? Are you making a comedy? Are you making a tragedy? Where are you focusing your camera? And what are you taking away from the scene that you're focusing on? And at some point I said that your mind is an ocean, and that's where all your memories are. all your, everybody you've ever met, every thought you've had is in this ocean, and your awareness is the lighthouse. And you can shine that awareness anywhere you want. Most of us, because we've created habits, because we've created conditioning, kind of just let the lighthouse go where it's going to go. We'll focus on stuff, you know, is this pleasure, is this pain? We want to move away from pain and obviously towards pleasure. But I remember when I wrote that in Whiskey and Yoga, I thought, you know, there's something to that. And I kind of went away from it. I Whiskey and Yoga was 2017. And then about a year ago, I was listening to a monk, and the monk basically said the same thing. He said, your mind is this blank, you know, large area where all your memories are, and your awareness is this ball of light, and you can shine it anywhere you want. And I'm like, oh my God, that's the lighthouse keeper. Mm-hmm. And so I realized it was time to write that book, and I wanted to not do it from a self-help standpoint, but to tell a story, because we're all on a journey. And so instead of kind of preaching or trying to teach people directly by saying, here's how your mind is shaped up, and here's what your awareness is, and here's how you fix your focus, and here's how you use willpower, I told a story to make it more relatable. And so that's how the lighthouse keeper came to be.
Got it. So I love the metaphor of the lighthouse, because it's true, right? I mean, everything that we experience, the people that we meet, the memories that we have, they're not forgotten, right? Just like energy cannot be destroyed, they're out there somewhere in the oblivion, blank, black, you know, deep, dark waters. But we do have the power within us to shine the light in whatever area that we want. Do we want to find an island? Do we want to find a beautiful ship? Or do we want to aimlessly, shine the light wherever our distracted mind takes us? So what are some ways in which people are shining the light in the wrong directions? If you can provide us an example on that.
Yeah, well, I think, God, you look at the world we live in today, and, you know, I think on average, so the last time I just recently checked this, because I'm working on some new material, there are 3.5 billion smartphones on the planet. So basically half the planet has smartphones. Mm-hmm. On average, we check our smartphones 85 times a day. So when you talk about the idea that if you want to be focused and do deep, meaningful work, you need periods of uninterrupted time. Well, if we're checking our phones 85 times a day, and let's say we all sleep 18 hours, or eight, I'm sorry, 8 hours a day, so that leaves us 16 hours for those 85 checks. How much focus, how much undivided attention are we giving to things that matter to us? And if we're checking, you know, I caught myself, you know, months back where I would just randomly check my phone. It hadn't vibrated, but I was like, I feel like I had this impulse. I need to check my phone because I need the dopamine hit. I need to see if anybody's texted. I need to see if anyone's liked something on Instagram or whatever. And what you realize, if our habits become our lives, then most of us are living lives of distraction. And when you talk or you hear about, you know, I think I saw something that said 1 in 3 teens today suffers a mental health disorder in the United States. Well, yeah, it's because they spend 9 hours a day on their phone. And when you talk about what's fulfilling in life, you know, unless you're running your Fortune 500 company from your smartphone, you're distracted. And so it's not an important thing in your life. And yet the things that are important to you, you keep pushing off because mm-hmm. you can't break the cycle that you've created for yourself.
Right. It's so interesting because social media and the smartphone hasn't been there with us humans for that long, if you consider the evolution of humanity, right? And so in many ways, we don't know the long-term impacts that this constant checking of the mobile phone will have on our psyche, our emotions, or even our evolution. So that's pretty interesting. Like, it's just 10 years, I'd say, or maybe 15 years since the advent of the modern smartphone or even social media. So it's pretty interesting. Well, I do these challenges from time to time, you know, try out different practices and find out how I respond to them. So I've done like a wake up in the morning, 5 a.m. challenge. I've done having a cold shower. Cold showers really transform my life. I do cold showers all the time.
Me too.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to try, maybe you provide me another reminder, is to try out, you know, like completely shutting off from my phone for maybe a day or maybe even 3 days. And I'm really curious of how that would impact my entire life. Have you tried that?
It's funny you say that. So when I write, I put my phone in another room.
Okay.
Because I know if I don't, and I mean, I've got the history of like at some point, I'll pause because I want to think about something. And then my mind's like, hey, since we're not writing right now, let's check the phone, and then you have 3 minutes that are gone, and my concentration's broken. And so I said, you know what, move it to another room. I was in Costa Rica on vacation last summer, and I made the commitment that I wouldn't bring my phone with me. Like, I, you know, wanted to take pictures and all that stuff, but I thought, you know what, let me just experience this. Let me experience it. So I left my phone in the room every day, and just experienced. I experienced volcanoes and monkeys, and it's weird because I think the first day or so, there's like this almost mental itch. And you're like, oh, like I gotta go check. I gotta see what's happening. What's happening that I'm missing out? It's that FOMO that people talk about. But then it kind of subsides. And you're like, you know what? Living life is pretty great. And social media, and like I said, I think it's not that it's a waste of time. I think there's a value. Right. It's got to be a tool that you use. And I think back to, discipline is freedom. That's a great example of it right there.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, life will continue. But it really depends on how present you are in the moment. The funny part about clicking a photo is that the assumption is that you're trying to capture the moment for a future moment, right? You're trying to capture this moment so that you can see it in the future. Yeah. And in doing so, you're missing the present moment. And I don't post that much on Instagram these days because somehow I feel there is a guilt within me, because I realize, and the more I post, especially on Instagram, because it's such a visible medium, I'm in some way contributing to the dopamine revolution that Instagram is a part of. Because in doing so, you put multiple filters and you're not showing a very authentic version of yourself. So I don't know. Maybe I'll get over it and start posting more on Instagram. But, inspirational stuff and real vulnerable stuff that really motivates people and gives them an insight into who I am truly. But yeah, that guilt is definitely there.
No, I'm with you. And I think I try to post inspirational quotes, either quotes that I've heard from someone or ideas I've come up with in my writing. But I don't post pictures of things I'm about to eat. I don't post pictures of animals. So I think like absolutely it has to be with discipline. But because you're right, it is like, gosh, am I contributing to someone's Instagram fix or dopamine fix? And it's a weird space that I think we're still trying to figure out how to navigate effectively.
Got it. So talk to us about masculinity now, as on where we are today, because that's something I'm really passionate about. And coming from you, who is an ex-Marine, who's led a life of a lot of discipline, who has experienced both sides, where, like you said, you told somebody that you need to go to the washroom and they were like, wait, FOMO, TMI, too much information. And as we are today, there's so many perspectives, right? With social media, everyone's got a voice right now. But just because everyone has a voice, it doesn't mean, right? It's actually that adds to the conversation. So what are your thoughts on where masculinity is right now? Does masculinity really need to heal? And so how can we take masculinity to where it needs to be in a way? Do you know what I mean? So voices.
It's a good question. I think, I think it's moving in the right direction in some degree. I think when you look at, I grew up, I still remember my dad in his office had, posters or pictures of John Wayne, and one of my favorite actors was Clint Eastwood, and they're these paragons of this idea of masculinity. And it's this idea that, you eat nails for breakfast and you don't cry because, crying is feeling. And I think we're starting to see, I think that's begun to erode, but I think the reality is, you have to, we're all some balance between being a thinking being and being a feeling being. And I think this idea that masculinity has to own the dominance of thinking and be left-brained is an outdated concept. I think that, it's okay to feel, and it's not only okay, it's amazing. And instead of bottling something up inside and then venting on, a coworker or a spouse or a child, owning your feelings, I think is actually a step into a greater sense of masculinity that we can all adopt, right? It's not the domain of anybody in particular. So I think it's getting away from that idea that you have to be this insensitive boulder of something and that you're going to be human.
Yeah. It's so true. And like you pointed out, there's a fine balance, right? Because you can't be one extreme. eating nails.
Right.
But the other end, you can't be too sensitive also, right? You get angry with something that somebody says indirectly that did not have the intention. And I think what men really need is more role models, right? How do you be a noble father? How do you be that brother? How do you be that son? I also find that men find it difficult to share, to express themselves. Like women, I think, just by their nature, are more emotional. And so it's easy for women to sort of huddle around and share and express, this is how my life is, my boyfriend, my husband, right? But men, I think, do not share that that much. And so what tends to happen is it gets held within their hearts or in their chakras, and that manifests in disease and illness. And I think the more we have discussions around these topics, it allows for men to say that it's okay to open, it's okay to share, it's okay to cry, but then there's this balance. And once we have those role models that are leading the life of pride and what it truly is to be a man, that's when things can be easier for other men around. Right? So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, it goes back to, I think if you look through evolution, you know, you talked about, you know, what the smartphone is going to do to us from an evolutionary standpoint. But if you look back, you know, the men were the hunters, the women were the gatherers.
Mm. Yeah.
Women had to communicate in a sense to understand this is where the food is, this is how far it is away from where we are. You know, this is the food that's healthy to eat, this is the food that's not healthy to eat. The men had to congregate, and their communication was much more because it was focused on this is what we have to kill, this is how we're going to do it. So I think, you know, I think you're absolutely spot on. I wanted to ask you though, you drew inspiration from me when you said something. Have you heard of the Wheel of Life?
The Wheel of Life, it sounds familiar. I mean, is it connected with Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey, or is that something?
No, it's complementary to that, but it's really this idea. So if you imagine, you know, almost a pizza, and you can have six slices of pizza or eight slices of pizza, mm-hmm. but look at that and you say, okay, so this slice, we're going to call that family. This slice is going to be career. This slice is going to be spirituality. This slice will be health and fitness, and you go around, you know, finance, whatever you want. And then you say, okay, where am I? And I think this applies to both men and women, but, you know, certainly for men, it's an exercise that I've used with some of my clients and it really resonates with them. On a scale of 1 to 10, where are you? Where are you in personal or intimate relationship? And you say, you know what, I'm honest. I try not to use 7. So I tell people you're either a 6 or an 8. Okay, I'm a 6. Like, oh, well, so then it's, well, who do I want to be? And I think the problem is we just go through life doing things without thinking about who we want to be. And so if I say, who do I want to be in my intimate relationship? What does that person look like? What are the habits of the person that I want to be? How does he interact with his spouse? What are his habits? What are his thoughts? And you create this idea of this is who I want to be in my relationship. And then you figure out, okay, what do I have to do to get from who I am today, the person who leaves dishes in the sink or doesn't put the toilet seat down or, you know, whatever the case may be, who do I need to be and what do I need to do to get there? I think that's a tool that, you know, men can do, women can do, anyone can do it. But I think it's, you know, it comes back to men have to be more in tune with their awareness of who they are instead of kind of having this mindset of being this caricature of a man.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, absolutely. I love that exercise. I love the spirit of inquiry, because every morning I try to do a lot of journaling and find out, you know, what do I really truly want? And am I there yet? And if I'm not there, then what are the steps that I can take to sort of get closer there, right? And I find that asking that question again and again, who do I want to be? Who do I want to be? Is very powerful, because it suggests that, you know, you need to adopt an archetype, right? Like who you are right now is not who you want to be. And there are certain steps that you can take in order to get there. But the beauty is that you can get there, and change is possible. And your brain can, you know, through neuroplasticity, your brain can change. One thing to add is there's this old Benjamin Franklin exercise that he used to do each and every day that brought him closer and closer to his habits. Do you know about that?
I don't think I do. So I'm excited to hear what you're going to say.
Right, right. So what he did was he identified those habits, this 8 to 9 habits. I think there were 13 habits that he believed would take him to where he wanted to be as an individual. And as we know, he was a great leader, communicator, and all sorts of things. But he used to have this card in his pocket all throughout the day. He used to divide that into, firstly, the type of habits that he wanted to have. Whether it was, like, I know one of the things he wanted was to have a clean home, to be clean, to be kind. So these wonderful, you know, characteristics that he wanted to sort of emulate and get closer. And then he would divide it into the number of days, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And every day that he would demonstrate those characteristics, he would put a tick on them, right? And so at the end of the week, he would evaluate, you know, how intentional have I been with those habits? And I do this. And I found that to be such a difference, because the truth is that our life is determined by our habits and our micro reactions and things that we do on a daily basis. And even though we're not doing it right now, just the realization that, okay, we're not doing it brings so much consciousness and intention into our everyday lives. Thanks a lot for sharing that idea, the wheel of life, and analyzing and assessing every aspect of our life, whether it's our spirituality, our relationships, our finances, whatever that might be. Action Tribe, are you finding it hard to de-stress and unwind in the midst of this crazy pandemic? Come join us for a soothing, relaxing breathwork session online on Zoom. Now, I do these sessions for our paid members twice a week, and I've received so many powerful testimonials from people who've received a lot of support, comfort, and healing from these sessions. And to show you just how powerful these yogic breathwork practices are, every month I do a breathwork intro workshop for people who'd like to give this a shot. In the past, people have paid anywhere between $10 to $20 for a drop-in. But for a short while, I've decided to make these sessions available for just 50 cents a ticket. And these sessions are live, but you just pay 50 cents. So if you'd like to learn how to calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss using your breath from the comfort of your home, visit my7chakras.com/breathworkintro. That's my7chakras.com/breathworkintro. I'll see you soon. And Action Tribe, I hope you've enjoyed our session so far, and you know, have some insights into how you can transform your life by shining the light in the right areas, just like a lighthouse keeper would. It is now time for our wisdom round, after which we are going into a deeper conversation, which is part of this interview, but for our Energy Circle members. And this extended conversation is one of the numerous bonuses available to members of the Action Tribe Energy Circle community. To learn more, go to my7chakras.com/join. That's my7chakras.com/join, so that you can see exactly what you'll get as an Action Tribe Energy Circle member. But for now, we'll do the wisdom round, which essentially consists of 4 questions so that our listeners can take note and take action. So David, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever received?
Oh, great question. You know, it's it came in the form of a book. And I go to go back to Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. That book set me on my journey. And the question, which was kind of a piece of advice, if you will, was, what is the purpose of your life? And what I realized at that point in time was I never looked at my life as having a purpose. And I never looked at purpose as being all-encompassing for life. I looked at what I want to do next. I looked at, where do I want to go next? What assignment did I want? And understanding purpose, I think it's like setting intention before a yoga class. You know, if intention gives our actions purpose and meaning and focus, we can do the same things for our lives. And so asking myself that question has put me on the journey that I'm on today, which I'm so grateful for, because it's just been rewarding and fulfilling, and being able to grow, but more importantly, contribute and help other people has been the richest part of my life to date.
Mm-hmm. And if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with someone who's living or dead, who would it be?
Oh, man, what a question. Gosh, I would, I would probably say Tony Robbins. I think he is just a force of nature. I mean, so many people throughout history, but I think what I found in listening to, different podcasts or listening to books on tape is if you listen to enough books from the same author, you're actually starting to get into their mind and you start to understand how they work. And I think with what Tony has done, he's fed hundreds of millions of people, he's impacted hundreds of millions of lives. I think spending an hour with him would be rewarding. I could certainly go in history, but you said one person, so that's my person.
Oh yeah, I also would love to spend 1 hour with Tony in Fiji, because his life was pivotal to me as well. I remember, I think it was 2009, 2010, where I came across some of his downloads online and all his seminars, and I kept listening and again and again and again. And I found him more interesting than Brian Tracy, who, by the way, is great, but just his voice, Tony's voice, was more animating, more actionable, more fiery, and that really changed my life. So, love Tony. What is that one thing you do in the morning or in the evening before you sleep that has really improved the quality of your life?
Yeah, so you talked cold showers. So I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Before I set foot out of bed, I offer 3 quick thank yous. I take a cold shower, which lasts about 30 seconds, and that's usually good enough. And then I do about a 15 or 20 minute meditation. And initially, when I started the 4 o'clock journey, it was, I had to trick my mind, because it's like, oh, this is so early and so painful. But what I've really come to see is the time I spend, from 4 to say 7:15 in the morning is really sacred time, because it's time where I can do personal development. I can do meditation. I can do journaling. I can really focus on gratitude. I can really focus on not only what do I accomplish during the day, but who do I want to be during that day? Who do I need to be? Who do I need to show up in these meetings as? Who do I need to, if I'm meeting with a coaching client or I'm meeting with a mentee, who do I need to be there for my keynote speaker? Who do I need to be for that? Because it's that time and preparation that's so crucial to setting up success for the day, as opposed to waking up and hitting snooze on my phone because I need 15 more minutes of sleep because I think that's somehow going to make me more well-rested. And then I scramble to get to work, and then I'm chasing the day until I get home. And the same thing at night. I do kind of a quick meditation at night, but also offer gratitude, just because it's those seeds that we plant into the subconscious mind that create the best fruit in the weeks, years, and months to come.
And if you could recommend one book for our listeners, which book would that be?
The book that I would recommend would be The Miracle Equation by Hal Elrod. So it's this idea that, if we go back to the idea that everything is energy, Tesla, energy vibrating certain frequency. The Miracle Equation is just the idea that if you combine unwavering faith with extraordinary effort, that's the equation for miracles. And it sounds so simplistic, but I'd love what he's done with that book. And that book has helped transform my life too, because you talk about purpose and you talk about setting your sights on a goal, unwavering faith and extraordinary effort will get you there.
So Action Tribe, would you like to receive this book for free? Because Audible.com is offering Action Tribe, that is all of you, everyone one free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can get to try out this new service, this new way of consuming a book by listening to it. Because as you might admit, listening is the new form of reading. And the fact that you're listening to this podcast proves my point. So if you would like to try out Audible by checking out The Miracle Equation by Hal Elrod, all you need to do is go to my7chakras.com/freebook, my7chakras.com/freebook, and you can start claiming your free credit. So David, thank you for joining us on today's session. Before we begin the last recording for our Energy Circle members, tell us, what is one thing you're grateful for and how can our listeners find more about you?
Well, AJ, thank you so much for having me on today. I would say I'm grateful for our time, because any platform to share part of our story, you know, every book that's written is a truth of some kind. And if it's a self-help book, it's the author's truth at that time in their life. And you know, if anything that I've said resonates with one person in your audience, then I've made a difference. So I'm really grateful for that. If people want to find out more about my work and upcoming events and my next book coming out here at the end of March, davidrichardsauthor.com, and I'm on David Richards Author on Instagram as well.
Perfect. So it's great that you're on Instagram. Action Tribe, if you're on Instagram, then take a screenshot of this episode as you see it on your mobile screen and then tag me so that I can share your story with our community, and make sure you tag David as well. My handle is at my7chakras. That's at my7chakras. And you can be assured that I will share your story with our community. And Action Tribe, we're now going to move into our bonus extended session for our Energy Circle members. The way you can find out more is by going to my7chakras.com/join, my7chakras.com/join. So do consider upgrading to listen to the entire session. But if not, it's totally fine. I hope you have a great week ahead.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my7chakras.com.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.